DC, Pemberton, and 95.1 W236 AF Burlington. Burlington, the pulse of Burlington County.
Thomas Gagliardi cruising you through the Gagliardi archives, and last weekend we had an exclusive interview with, all I can say is he's the legend, a man by the name of John McLaughlin. And last Saturday night we featured part one. And just to rehash, we talked a lot about his brand new CD called Industrial Zen. Well, he continues the trend here and talks about his early days back in 1954 and what music he was listening to then. This was John McLaughlin, who joined us last Saturday night. This is part two of our exclusive interview.
I was hearing blues music, flamenco music, and when I hear flamenco music, I want to, because I abandoned the guitar, the piano right away in favor of the guitar.
Wow.
And I wanted to be a flamenco guitar player.
Yeah.
I wanted to play flamenco music. I loved it so much. But I was living in this little village. I mean, they didn't even know what flamenco was. You know,
right.
A little village south of Scotland. I mean,
You're in your own.
About
yeah,
it. But I had the jazz records, and I used to listen to Willis Conover, the American Forces Network, the AFN.
Yeah.
And every week, this was Willis Conover playing Jazz Hour.
Right,
you know, I mean,
right.
And I'll be glued to the radio, listening to this. You know, I'll be hearing Miles or. You know, all the new hits of the 50s. But it was just luck that I got exposed to all this music. But, I mean, I used to skip school once a month and hitchhike down to Manchester,
yeah.
Where I'd stay with my brother, because there was a flamenco club, and I could see and hear the real flamenco guitar players. It was like a Spanish group of people, local Spaniards, you know,
mm-hmm.
who were in Manchester, which is a big city. And they'd get together, and they'd invite a flamenco guitar player once a month. And I used to go down there and watch it,
yeah.
And listen to it. And this was a marvelous side of my education. And, you know, I mean, it was inevitable. When I ran into Paco, I mean, this guy, what a wonderful guitar player.
Oh, God, yeah.
What a wonderful musician.
Yeah.
I mean, really radical. And he's been really criticized, Tom, by the way.
Now, why so?
Really criticized by the purists. The purists, they're like the bane of the music industry, the music world.
Because he stepped into the unknown a little bit? Is that?
Yeah, yeah. Because he's pushing the barriers back.
Yeah.
No, but listen, I mean, there's a very famous story. I was in the Baron Club, I think it was 1969, Miles was playing. I wasn't in his band. I was playing with Tony. I was doing recordings with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember he walked off the stage, and a brother came up to him and said, Miles, why don't you play like you used to play? Miles looked at him and said, how did I used to play? You know?
That's beautiful.
What can you say?
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
people, they got these fixed ideas, like, you should sound like this, or you should play like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
If you don't, you know,
yeah, we want to hear
you're doing it all wrong.
Right. We want to hear Birds of Fire again. We want to hear, you know. I mean, and I understand that, and I... And it's just like the radio show. It's the same thing. It's like, you know, the progressive rock audience, they want to hear the Genesis and the Yes and the bands that sound
that.
But it's like, you know, hey, look, that was great in 1977. That was great in 1974. But,
yeah.
You know, there are young people and there are new bands and bands that, you know, the guys are, you know, in their mid-40s and 50s have been doing the same thing for 30 years. And you know, it's just as progressive and as different as,
yeah.
You know, as it was back when the age started, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
no,
but,
I mean, it's really, it's flagrant in the classical world, because there's a big crisis being going on in the classical music world, because over the at least 10, 15 years, because the people, you know, they don't want to hear Olivier Messiaen or Béla Bartók or Stravinsky, for that matter,
right.
Let alone the really young contemporary composers.
Yeah.
They want to hear Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, you know, Schubert, Brahms, and they're just like, you know, whether it's 18th, 19th century, and it's, but the musicians are getting fed up with it, the orchestra's getting fed up with it, the audiences are dwindling, you know, it's, but at least there are a lot of, I don't know about the United States, but in Europe, there's at least tremendous support for the young composers, and of course, there are a lot of jazz festivals in Europe. That that are full of American jazz musicians every summer. You know? So at least it's that, but it's a weird thing how people, they want to hear what they heard before. They want you to play like you played before.
It's fear.
And I don't know whether it's something, some side of human nature.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I think people get scared because they get so used to one thing, and they don't want to have their imagination changed. They want to stay. And I understand. Yeah. Hey, look, it's a challenge to keep listening to music you've never heard. It is a challenge. I mean, as a DJ myself, it's tough.
I know. I mean, but fortunately, because let's face it, I'm a very marginal musician, but the marginal audience that I have is fortunately big enough and enthusiastic and passionate enough about hearing new music that we're able to survive, and a lot of us are able to survive and play our music.
Yeah.
I mean, God bless them all, and all of the listeners. I know, I really give you my deepest thanks, because without you, I'm out of work. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, as I would say to you, don't thank me, keep recording, because it keeps me busy. It keeps me, quote-unquote, into a job,
But I grew up like that,
yeah.
Tom.
Because,
listen, are you kidding? When I heard Love Supreme in 1960, it was done in 64, came out in 65 in Europe. I heard Love Supreme. I had no idea what he was doing.
Right.
And I'd been listening to Coltrane for 5 years already. All of a sudden, I hear this man that I love, adore. I mean, he was a hero. He still is a hero to me.
Yeah.
And he's playing music. I don't know what he's doing.
Right.
What is he doing? You know? I didn't know what to do. I was in a state of, not shock, but like confusion.
Yeah, euphoria almost.
And I had to listen to the record every day for 9 months before I finally twigged on to what he was doing.
Yeah.
It took me 9 months of listening to it just
to figure it out.
Suddenly one day, oh, God, that's it.
Mm, wow.
You know, but the thing is, when you get it, it's like you have the most deep satisfaction.
Gratifying.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you hear something simple, and you enjoy it, and you get a satisfaction. But when you work at something, all of a sudden, it's a discovery.
Yeah.
You discover a world that you didn't know existed. And
this is
just marvelous. And this is one of the marvelous things about music, is you can discover dimensions, not just like little things that have a nice taste.
Mm-hmm.
You got dimensions on worlds and feelings and emotions you didn't even know you had.
Oh yeah.
Z88.9, moving and mixing Mount Laurel, Marlton, and Mount Holly.
Hi, this is John McLaughlin, and you're listening to the Gaglio Archives.
Well, you know, it's like this. The Lost Trident sessions took me 6 months to master, to sit and listen to every track. And it's one of those discs of all the thousands and thousands that I have where, you know, my hair still stand on end because it was an accomplishment to, for 6 months, to sit and listen to every track over and over again.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
And then playing it for people that John had never heard of it before. And they're like, well, who's the Mahavishnu Orchestra? And I'm playing this for my friends and I'm orchestrating like a conductor. And they're like, you know what, man, I don't really know any of this, but this is intense. And you liking it is making me want to go get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Oh.
It's wonderful. But I mean, and it's funny, you know, Jerry Goodman was by my house a couple of days ago.
Right.
Yeah, because he did this thing with Billy Cobham.
Yeah.
With the North German big band who were doing.
Oh, they're doing the Mahavishnu music.
The Mahavishnu Orchestra.
Yeah.
And Jerry went over. I heard about it because I know the people, the big band. I did the liner notes for the album.
Right.
But they had a performance, so I couldn't go. But
I heard
Jerry
was
there.
I heard it was great.
And Billy was there, and Jerry decided to come by my neck of the woods, and he calls me. He said, I'm just around the corner.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I haven't seen him in about 10 years.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, that's beautiful.
And you know what happened? Last night, I dreamt for the first time in my life of the Mahavishnu Orchestra.
Wow.
And we were supposed to play a concert, and we hadn't rehearsed. And I'm thinking, what tunes are we going to play? You know, one of those old hits we used to have.
That's strange,
but it was such a nice feeling. I remember in my dream was such a nice feeling.
Yeah.
Anyway,
there was a great book that came out this year as well, and I'm sure you know about it. Walter Koloski's.
Walter. Yeah.
Let me tell you, we had him on earlier this year, and when you talk about a guy with passion, that it was like he was writing the Bible of the Mahavishnu Orchestra. I mean,
he's a wonderful human being.
Yeah.
I mean, the opening statement of that book. I know he sent us some copies.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I was born 3 years too late for my own life. What a wonderful opening.
Well, you got to be happy with the resurgence of, I mean, look, you know, I love everything you do, but I mean, you have to be happy with the resurgence and the interest now of the Mahavishnu Orchestra again.
I mean, with this big band playing, there's a string quartet playing in Austria, they're playing Mahavishnu music.
Yeah, the Mahavishnu Project.
Yeah, there's the Mahavishnu Project with Greg Bandian.
What a good guy.
And they're great. I mean, I saw them in New York.
Yeah.
Was it last year?
Yeah, he was telling me about it, yeah.
Oh, my. I mean, they're killing.
Yeah. These
guys are playing, yeah.
And it's like, I try to tell my friends, it's not a novelty show. I mean, the music of the Mahavishnu Orchestra, it's the real deal.
I went up on stage and spoke to the audience because I was so moved.
Yeah.
I was really moved, Tom.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I don't even know how to describe it. I was so touched because these people, they loved that music, and the audience was into it. But the musicians, they were just pouring it out. It was wonderful.
Yeah,
that was really wonderful. No, I mean. I mean, between you and me, and the listening audience,
right.
I actually did try to get the band together.
Wow.
During the 80s.
Yeah.
I had hoped that music would be stronger than the various egos around.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
But I couldn't get it together. But at least
there's been healing now, you know, from what I'm gathering and understanding. You can tell me if I'm wrong, but, you know, it seems that there are a lot of relationships were mended again and things seem to look up after that.
Yeah, I mean, but, I love them all. I mean, it was, we were together two and a half years?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
A short amount of time for some of the greatest music ever made.
Yeah, I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
Really amazing. And it was so nice to see Jerry, and he's looking great, playing great. I mean, and I just, you know, I went on because I had this dream last night, and just this morning, I went on the internet because there's so much stuff on MySpace or YouTube, and I saw this clip with Jerry is playing a solo from, I don't know, 1972 something.
Yeah.
I mean, like 34 years ago. and he was burning away, and Billy was killing. I mean, it was just, we were rocking.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm saying, what a wonderful band it was.
I say still some of the greatest sounds I've ever heard have, you know, been on the Birds of Fire album, the Lost Trident Sessions, the interplay between you and Jan. I mean, that, to me, that's timeless. It, you know, it's some of the greatest stuff I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'd like to. It's too bad. There's still some strange vibes around. I mean, I would tell you the truth. I would play now, but I don't think Rick even plays bass anymore.
No, I think he's just into the photography thing, correct?
Yeah, he's deep into it.
We had Jan on maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, and he's still, you know, he talked very highly of those times and highly of you and, you know, the music that came out of that time. And you know, you could hear him smiling as he was talking about it. So you knew that, you know, it was a great era.